But for the first part of this hour, we're really lucky both to have an artist who works directly in the field that we're talking about today here with us to present something very special, and then a museum specialist who has worked with bringing this artwork into the collection and all the various types of things that had to be thought about in order to make that a reality, which again maps directly back to what we were just talking about before. So I'm just going to introduce George Punkenkut and Amanda Pallirino first. George is going to demonstrate the artwork for you, and then Amanda's going to follow up with a presentation about her institution, about some of the artworks they've collected, and touch a little bit more on that work itself. And then we're going to sit down and have a panel discussion. I'm going to drag Nick Richardson, our collections manager, on stage with me, and Anne will join us as well, and we'll talk more about artwork in the digital age and what it means for collecting institutions and how things like apps and software code is being collected now, and again, kind of just elaborate on some of the things we were talking about before. So George Punkenkut, Australian artist and interaction designer, standing right in front of you here. 11 years working with health technologies and biofeedback and the intersection between that and art, and I'm going to let him talk a little bit more about that as well. He's done some really amazing projects, and you can read more in detail in your program. Exhibited at GOMA, obviously, this is what we're talking about here today, but also some other really cool places. MoCA in Taipei is one of my favorite museums in the world, so that must have been exciting to work with them as well. Done what I consider some of the most interesting interdisciplinary work going right now. We'll start off with George, but let me just introduce Amanda so we can just have a seamless transition here. Amanda, head of conservation at Queensland Art Gallery at GOMA, and since 2003, kind of an expert on audiovisual and electronic artworks in the collection. Comes out of Queensland University and University of Canberra prior to that. So without any further ado, I'll give it over to George.
Thanks a lot. So I just thought I wanted to actually bring a version of what we had in the GOMA archives. And then I realized in my haste that my own iPad wasn't a jailbroken iPad, and that the app no longer works because the how this is working, if I just go to my slide here. I just talk really about this gray area between a prototype and new works and how that's kind of complicated some of this process. Hello. So this is the version of the work that's in the GOMA collection. This is the iPad work up in the center. And then as part of that project, I adapted some of the video cued recall process, but I put it into a including it into the work itself. So these portraits of people interacting and reflecting on their experience were exhibited as part of the work at GOMA. So if we turn the sound up on them, or on one of those video clips, just mouse over to underneath. Yep. There's a sound control somewhere there, isn't it? It's okay. So these people were recorded in a studio, and then they told some stories about what happened during their experience during that interaction. So part of that was really, as an artist, I'm interested in what the experience of these technologies is and how it shapes our experience of ourselves. And so what are the kind of narratives we have about body-mind connection and embodiment? And so these technologies become a way of drawing out new stories, new ways of relating. That's looking like it's, oh, it's hung, that's okay. So in the project, if I might just jump ahead from here, really it came from a medical research project at the Children's Hospital at Westmead. And so I approached a doctor, I met at an event, and she was very interested in the work I was doing, and she thought there could be some application for this practice in the work she does with children in hospital. So really looking at if this biofeedback is around how we regulate aspects of our nervous system, how could you use that as an emotion regulation tool for children when they're experiencing distress during clinical procedures? So the Australian Network for Art and Technology and the James N. Kirby Foundation gave us a grant to basically do some design research. Yeah. So I had a 6-month residency at the hospital. And so initially, one of the things that we wanted to do was do a video installation, which is what most of all my works prior to this have been, kind of large scale immersive video projections that you control with your vital signs. But obviously, when we wanted to do something in a clinical setting with children undergoing these procedures, that wouldn't do. Like, you can't turn the lights down in a clinic while people are being injected. So I was either going to make some kind of three-dimensional object that was luminous in some way, or find something else. And then so we looked at, they were using iPads in the hospitals already at the time as distractions. So we thought, well, that's quite a neat control group. If we have one group of kids just playing Angry Birds and then another group of kids,
playing. I opened my eyes and I was actually enjoying the stillness because I'm not.
Can we just pause that?
Very often, not even
in any way. Yep. So there's a control group there, and then basically we just set about a process of prototyping, at first just with very basic desktop systems, and then eventually prototyping a system where we could have a laptop underneath the table, but just getting kids to use the iPad. The iPad shows the graphics. In this prototype we developed, I worked with a developer and he made a system that would draw shapes very simply, and the rest of it is all controlled in my own system. I program in an environment called MaxMSP, which is quite a popular tool, runs on Mac operating systems and Windows as well. It's not kind of like a it's not like C++ or any kind of basic computer language though, so that's my own familiarity. We developed that process, so a lot of what I do as an artist is really working about mapping. So if we look at this graph here, that's from the version that was in the Goma show. When you place your hand onto the screen, it pulls up those graphs there. So you can see those data changing over time, and it's those changes over time that I creatively map to different shapes expanding and contracting, or the color temperature changing, and then and the sounds as well. So all that happens, I do that in the kind of MaxMSP software, and then it's just getting drawn here. So we're prototyping that in waiting rooms in the hospital, and then kind of seeing how the kids were responding to it, whether they could interact with it and control it or not. So those initial findings were very encouraging, and kids found it easier than the adults usually. Interesting, like children are just physiologically a lot more reactive as well. And then as that was coming along, it was like, wow, this is really quite interesting. So I've started becoming interested in the idea that these tablet computers and mobile computing generally is an interesting idea about how an artist could get their work out into the world in terms of distribution and different ways. Really this idea that, also trying to work with this idea that computers were changing and our relationship to computers were changing. So I'll just, let's go back a bit. Jump forward. Yeah. So these were the kids are getting about, say, 10 of these injections. They're quite deep tissue, but they're receiving a gas, but it's really just about managing the anticipatory anxiety, a lot of it, and the pain. So, yeah, I was attracted to these in terms of, as an artist, visually, they've got some very beautiful optical qualities of, you'd be all familiar with, in terms of, like, yeah, thank you. I might just connect this up as well. In terms of the luminosity, and if I was working a lot with projections, and I always found projection very frustrating in terms of the colour quality is always quite washed out, and I was looking for something intense and also very intimate. So I thought, beyond the work in the clinic, I was quite interested in this as a kind of a medium to work with.
So...
Yeah, thanks. So what it's like as an interactive experience, the intimacy there. But then also, like I said before, what these mobile devices signify at this point in time as we're starting to kind of change this relationship to computing. So we took that work and it kind of adapted it. It kind of like went a little bit, the features creeped out of just being used as the clinical tool, and we started refining it more for use in the show at GOMA, because there was some advanced time in terms of about 6 months when I was developing it before the show. So what you see here is actually the version that's just been released into the App Store in April. So this is the version one, the very first version. So it's really still kind of halfway between being an interactive artwork and a kind of customer-facing app. So there's actually a whole lot of login interface aspects of the application that when people buy the app, there's all these kind of hello, welcome to the application, here's how you use it. So we're still developing that side of it there. This is the version that's in the App Store. I'll just turn it up. So where all my creative work was happening in a desktop computer underneath the table before, now that's all been embedded into the app itself. So, and again, just to talk about some of the complexity or the layers of code going on in this, this is obviously written in Xcode, Objective-C, but then it's embedded within that is another, like a visual programming language, Pure Data, a Pure Data patch, which you can embed inside your applications these days. So I'm still working in that visual programming language. For me, as an artist, I need those languages to have a more exploratory and kind of physical relationship to the data. It's not it's going to be this, this, and this. You actually have to feel these things as you're composing the works. So that's been useful to have that embedded in there, but then the programmer I work with, he says, oh, George, this is a real drag, having this Pure Data thing here. I'd really just love it, have all just one level of code without all these other stuff hanging on. But yeah, so I'll just explain briefly how the app works. Basically, this app, as well as the app in GOMA, it's designed to respond to decreases in heart rate. So the idea is that you could give people feedback about when they're relaxing. So if people find it difficult to relax, you could say, well, why don't you use your breath? So if I breathe out very slowly, I can make those shapes contract and go green eventually, or blue. Obviously, there's a little bit of like public speaking anxiety happening as well, but nothing compared to a needle, so I'm sure. So you get the idea there. So really, if I could just talk now about the process with the jailbreaking. I think Amanda will talk about this as well. But when we were prototyping this, we didn't want to put it straight away into the Apple Store, and it was completely meaningless to publish it as a real app, because it, you know, half of it was living in a computer under a table. So it was developed as a prototype and tested in the hospital as a prototype, and then shown at GOMA as a prototype, which means that when you're prototyping and developing apps at that level before they're published, you have a developer license that's kind of like it's a trial. So when we produce this app, it doesn't have a status as a real app. And so the license that you have for that expires every 12 months or 18 months. But there's a very fixed window of time where you can be experimenting with your app, sharing it out to people. You can have up to, I think it was 100 licenses that you could hand out and install on different apps, on different devices. So that process is you have a specific device and you say, yes, we're going to give a provisioning profile to this iPad, and then six of the ones at GOMA, you have this number, and then at a certain point in time, they'll just expire. You go to launch them, they'll open up, and then they'll just shut down straight away. So that's all kind of fine. My practice has been just showing new work all the time. You know, I've got another work, the Heart Library Project, and that's been going maybe for about 6 years. But this idea that you'd have to know for sure that this would be, you know, this will run if I open it up again in 3 years, 4 years' time, is kind of a new kind of thing that I had to really kind of like, oh, right, this is a big change in how I think about my work. How do we get around that? The only way we could get around that was through jailbreaking the app. And so this is something Amanda was initially, jailbreaking the app, we don't know about that. But it was the only way you can actually retain some level of control and autonomy over that thing. So I think we could talk about this in the discussion afterwards, but really it's a funny relationship you enter into when you start making work for hardware, you know, owned by Apple and other companies as well, I guess, in that, like, well, I'm attracted to the fact that it can be distributed around the world and there's a whole kind of, like, audience of people I can engage with just like that. But at the same time, it's not something that's intended to be long-term in any way, yeah? You can't, if you're not jailbreaking your device, you can't even wind back to previous versions, yeah? It's a kind of a one-way road. So I'm still kind of making up my, like, where do I sit with this? And I think it's going to be really important that I continue to develop other works, not within this little economy and a kind of distribution system, because it completely, the fact that you can't control it in that way is a real issue for me.